Welcome to Family Talk.
The Supreme Court is legislating. The legislature is static, and the president does whatever he wants. Did you know that the framers of the Constitution thought this might happen and included within that sacred document something that we can do about it? Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today my dad, Dr. James Dobson, interviews Senator Tom Coburn and Mark Meckler about the Convention of the States. Dr. Tom Coburn is a former United States Senator from Oklahoma and a former private practice medical physician. Our second guest is Mark Meckler, who is the president of Citizens for Self-Governance and the co-founder and former national coordinator of the Tea Party Patriots. Now, I could fill an entire program with the credentials of these men, but I don't want to take any more time from today's broadcast. Here now is Dr. James Dobson on today's edition of Family Talk.
Well, Dr. Meeker and Ryan, my son, and I are so pleased to have two distinguished men with us on the phone today. And they're here to talk about something extremely important and something I'll tell you that I am fascinated by. As Ryan just told our listeners, the first person on the phone today is the former Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma, a longtime friend of mine, a man that I respect very highly, and Mark Meckler, an attorney and the president of Citizens for Self-Governance. And that title will give you an idea of where we're headed today. Now, we're going to talk with these knowledgeable gentlemen about a movement that's based on Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution that would call for a convention of states. Remember those words, a convention of states. It would allow for amendments to the U.S. Constitution to be passed by three-quarters of the state legislators. It would not be a rewriting of the Constitution. It would not be a complete revamping of the Constitution. It would mean that the state legislators, three-fourths of them, could pass amendments that would then be binding and would go into the Constitution and would address some of the problems that many of us are very concerned about. Now, addressing the listeners who are in that category, you've been saying, what is going on in Washington? What is happening there? Are they crazy? Can they not work together? And my goodness, look what our president is doing, to say nothing of the decisions that are coming out of the judiciary, and especially the Supreme Court, which now appears ready to redefine the institution of marriage. So for all three branches of government, there is disunity and discord and some things that look downright foolish to those of us out in the hinterlands. And so what we're going to talk about today is a remedy for that, which could be, and I'm telling you, it has the possibility of becoming the law. It's already in the Constitution, which allows it. That's Article 5. So let's start. Senator Coburn, take what I've just said and elaborate on it and tell us why this movement, why this legislation, I guess you'd call it that, are needed at this time.
Well, Dr. Dobson, first of all, you alluded to the fact that most people can't figure out Washington today. And Washington's made up essentially of career politicians that want to further their career, and there's this normal tension when they go to make decisions about things of whether it will affect their election or will it actually contribute to and fit with what their constitutional duties are. And unfortunately, most of the time, the constitutional side of it loses and the professional vocational side wins, and they end up voting for things that will enhance their political career but won't necessarily enhance the country. So a Article 5 convention would be designed and brought forward to the American public to restore our Constitution to where it was meant to be, one, to restore a significant amount of states' rights and the states' sovereignty, to restore a earlier definition of the Commerce Clause and the General Welfare Clause, which is where most of the courts have made rulings in error as compared to what our founders said those two clauses were to be about, and would then reinforce Article 1, Section 8, which is the enumerated powers of the Constitution, which lists very specifically the role of the federal government, and everything else other than that is left to the people in the states. And so what we'd like to see is a return to where the balance between the states and the federal government is brought to where it was intended to be. And there's tremendous benefits for us if we do that. The first benefit is we can start handling some of this unbelievable amount of debt that's getting ready to be placed on our kids because we've promised things that we can't deliver and don't have the money to deliver. Number two is we will be back in line with something that will make our country and our economy and consumerism and entrepreneurship successful again because we will have generated less interference by the federal government rather than more. So to me, it's the only answer. After serving, 16 years in Washington, Washington isn't about to give up the power that they have. And this is the one thing that the citizens of the United States, those that are subject to the laws that the elite actually make, can do to actually rebalance and return our freedom and liberties to us as they were intended by our founders.
Human beings never willingly give up power, do they? I mean, an example. George Washington did. He limited himself to two terms. But, boy, that is rare.
That's rare because of all the trappings that come from the positions of being in a position of power. And that's human nature. We understand that. We know that. But the fact is what has happened is we've had a Supreme Court that has misinterpreted the intent of the founders, knowingly misinterpreted the intent of the founders, to be able to accomplish things that are outside the role and scope as was originally designed by our founders for our federal government. And if we're to survive, we've got to go back the other way.
Essentially, the founding fathers gave our national government the responsibility for military intervention and protection of the people. I didn't say that very well, but I do remember that.
They did. There's no question that they did, and they gave them certain duties in terms of post office, in terms of interstate highway system and roads and bridges and things like that. There are certain specific roles that if you go and look in the first article of the Constitution, you will find in Section 8 the enumerated powers. And it's very specifically listed out there. Here is what the federal government's to do. Everything else that's not listed right here is up to the states and the people. And if you compare that statement in the Constitution to where we are today, you'll see that somebody is cheated. Mm-hmm. Somebody has not followed what the intent of our founders were.
There would be no Obamacare, would there?
There'd be no Obamacare. There'd be no Department of Education. Matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson was quoted as saying, as if you wanted the federal government involved in education, you'd have to pass a constitutional amendment saying they could be involved in education. And that's author of the Declaration of Independence and one of our founders. So here's a guy that wrote all of it, commenting about what would be required for the federal government to be involved in education. And most people, most of your listeners know, we've spent $3 trillion on education since 1976 at the federal level with not one parameter better. Nothing's improved. So we're not very good at these things, and our founders knew it.
And they've almost bankrupt ourselves doing it or trying to.
Right.
$19 trillion in the hole. Mark, I was listening recently to Michael Ferris, who's a constitutional lawyer and a great friend of mine, on C-SPAN, and the two of you are working closely with him. But he said on that day, and I made a note of it, that there are essentially three things that this constitutional convention would accomplish. One, it would impose fiscal restraints on the federal government. They just can't spend money wildly like that, $19 trillion in debt. Secondly, it would limit the power of the jurisdiction of the federal government, including the judiciary. And I want to have you talk about that. And third, it would impose term limits on federal officials. Boy, those sound like really good ideas to me. Do they to you?
Yeah, they sound like great ideas to me. And importantly, Dr. Dobson, they sound like great ideas to the majority of American citizens. You know, there's polling that shows over the last 30 years consistent support at the 75 or 80% level for imposing some kind of fiscal restraints on the federal government. Everybody knows the federal government spends more than it takes in. Everybody knows individuals can't do that, companies can't do that, and ultimately it leads to bankruptcy, and that's where we are as a nation. So it's wildly popular with the American people, and Washington, D.C. will never impose fiscal restraints on itself, so we have to do it. And second is, if you look at the polling, especially recently, and it's actually trending more and more in this direction, today 66% of American citizens say the federal government is too big and too deeply involved in our lives. It's important we remember that that's not just conservatives. It's not just Republicans. 66% is a very large majority. So the vast majority of Americans say we need some kind of scope and jurisdictional limitations on the federal government. We need to get them out of our lives, return control back to the states and back to the people where it belongs. That includes, as you intimated, restrictions on the federal judiciary, subject matter restrictions, jurisdictional restrictions, the kinds of things that the founders intended. They never intended in their wildest imagination that the Supreme Court, nine folks in black robes, would be the arbiters of virtually everything that happens in the United States of America. They tried to make the branches co-equal, and instead what they ended up with was the Supreme Court being supreme. So you can limit that authority in that jurisdiction under this clause of the application for the Convention of States we proposed.
Now, the opposition to this basic idea is that it could become a runaway train. And one of the greatest documents ever written, other than the Bible, and maybe the closest to being a perfect document because it's lasted for more than 200 years, is the U.S. Constitution. And they're afraid that when you open that up, then all kinds of mischief could occur and the Bill of Rights and other things could be tampered with. But that's really not at risk, is it?
No, those arguments don't hold water. And when we listen to those arguments, it's important that we listen to where those arguments came from initially. There's some great work been done by Professor Rob Nadelson out there. Every single argument being made on the basis of the runaway convention and being made by those who are the opponents comes literally from the radical left in America. One of the most important pieces of evidence that they rely upon, and these are folks, remember, on the right that are relying on these arguments, they rely upon a letter from Justice Warren Burger, Chief Justice Warren Burger, to Phyllis Schlafly. And in a correspondence, she asks the Chief Justice what he thought of a convention of states, and he said he worried that it might run away and who knows what would happen. It's important we remember Chief Justice Warren Burger was Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. At the time, that court delivered to us one of the most infamous, absolutely incorrect, radical decisions in the court's history called Roe versus Wade, something your listeners are no doubt familiar with. So here we have a radical, liberal Supreme Court justice saying he worries about a runaway convention. At the time he wrote that letter, by the way, Dr. Dobson, there were a variety of states in the nation that were considering using Article 5 as a method for overturning Roe versus Wade. So why would a radical leftist justice be worried about a convention of states? He's worried about it because he's worried that the citizens will regain their rightful place as the sovereign in this country and will put the Supreme Court in its place. And so all these arguments come from the radical left, and unfortunately it's propaganda that many on the right have bought.
In fact, Senator Coburn, you were saying before we went on the air that everybody should remember we have a runaway train going on in Washington right now. Why are we terrified of a runaway convention when Washington is totally out of control?
Dr. Dobson, I couldn't agree with you more. Number one is we've got the executive branch now pushing limits far beyond they were ever intended in terms of the executive branch's power. We have Congress actually acting in ways in areas that they really have no authority and not acting in areas where they do have authority. And then finally, we have the courts that are running away with decisions all the time that have no closeness at all in the basis of their jurisprudence to what the founding documents of this country and the Constitution have to say. So, you know, what has happened to us is you have federal regulations now that trump law made by members of Congress because the regulations then get reinforced by judges So one of the things we should be concerned about is that we have a Congress that has given away its prerogative both to the courts and to the executive branch. And as they have given that away, their power over the purse and in terms of truly writing law so they could be held accountable for it has gone away. So we have a runaway Constitution right now where the Supreme Court makes decisions that aren't founded on the intent of the original founders, where the Congress passes laws that ignore their oath to the Constitution and allow the bureaucracies to make changes and to actually write law. And then finally, we have a president that, through his executive powers, is testing the limits that are far beyond anything was ever intended for a president, an executive branch operative, to ever have in this country.
Yeah, he has a pen and a phone. He's actually creating and passing laws himself, isn't he?
Right, executive orders that then become lawful.
And that is not constitutional.
No, but you know, here's some other things that we could do. And Mark and I haven't talked about these specifically, but you could pass an amendment to the Constitution to give the members of Congress standing when legislation that they've passed has been changed significantly by the executive branch through executive orders. You could give them standing so at least they could challenge it in a court of law. One of our problems today is the president does a lot of things and we can't get any standing because we can't show injury. So we could change that small factor and give members of Congress who are the lawmaking body for our country
but what
standing
president
before the courts to challenge what's going on both in the executive agencies and the executive orders.
But what president is going to limit his own power that way?
They're not. That's why we need to have a convention of the states to where we can actually do that. Nobody in Washington wants to limit their own power.
Yeah.
It's not in their nature.
Well, what kind of response are you getting? I mean, this is a mighty mountain to climb. 3/4 of the state legislatures, at least you don't have to deal with the low-information voters directly. This is not going to be put to a vote by the people except for the fact that the people elect the legislators. But do you really have a hope that this could come to be?
I do, or I wouldn't be associated with it. I think this is the answer for our country to our ability to cheat history, to actually allow our republic to last longer than what it would otherwise. And, you know, this is not going to be easy. It's going to take several years, 2 to 3 years, to get the requisite number of states. But it's easy to look at the federal government and make the case to anybody who's out there that it's out of control. Our future's out of control now based on the obligations that they've made, and that I think I could sell this to 85% of the people that stand in front of me, even if they came in totally opposed. And the other thing is, it's the only truly constitutional way that we can get back the liberties and the power that were meant for the people.
You implied just now, Senator, that our country may not long endure if we don't take some steps to limit government.
Well, I believe that to be the case, James. I wrote a book called The Debt Bomb, and it's coming. Nobody knows when, but the collapse of the financial industry and the ability for us to fund our debt is drawing very quickly to a close. And we have to make major changes if we're going to survive that without a horrendous economic collapse.
Mark,
and so that's my belief.
Mark, weigh in here.
I absolutely agree with what the senator says. I think the collapse is inevitable if we as citizens don't act. It's important that we remember what our role is as citizens. This is a unique nation in that we are sovereign citizens, and I believe uniquely and divinely inspired as a nation. The document you referred to, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, I see God's hand in the formation of the nation and all the way through its history. You know, I think about Romans 13, where it says everyone's subject to the governing authorities. There is no authority except that which God has established. But I think a lot of times when people read Romans 13 and they think about their role here in the United States of America, they misinterpret that. Because in America, we, the people, are the authority. I mean, this is unique in human history. We've been given the authority in this country. We are the sovereign citizens. So the question is, for your listeners, is what do we do about that? And I think it's important that we remember, whatever we do, We are the government. I believe we are asked by God to take responsibility for that, to execute on that responsibility. Everybody in their own way, Senator Coburn in his way, me in my way. Sometimes it's folks just talking to their neighbors about being involved. And so often I hear people say, and it really concerns me, that somehow our role as Christians is separate from our role in the political sphere. I don't understand how you separate yourself as a Christian from what's going on in the nation. And I think we have an obligation to participate. We are the government in this country. And if the government falls, I think, you know, we'll be duly judged for that. We're part of the problem. Yeah. We are either going to get in there and act as sovereign citizens. We're going to call for this convention. We're going to get in and we're going to restrain the federal government. If we don't, I don't think it ends pretty for this nation.
Senator Coburn, you have spent how many years in the House and Senate?
James, I've spent 16 years of my life in the House and the Senate. And I left early, long before I ever had a recurrence of my prostate cancer, the knowledge of that, because I didn't think I could continue solving any problems in Washington. And this is the answer for our country. Our founders gave it to us. And I wanted to be involved in a solution that actually is going to solve the problem, not just keep complaining about what the symptoms of the problems are, but actually is a solution for it.
If people really knew what goes on day by day in the Congress and in Washington, they would despair, wouldn't they? There would be anger. There would be a willingness to rein that system in.
Dr. Dobson, I believe if the average American knew what the oath of their member of Congress or their senator took, and then compared their actions as they see on the Senate floor and the House floor and the committee hearings, I think they would recall most of them. Because the oath doesn't say anything about your state. It says about serving the country and preserving and protecting the Constitution. And I found during the vast majority of my time there that most of the time those things weren't happening. And that's why I've received some of the ostracism that I received, but it's also what led us to do some of the exposure in terms of what the American people need to know about what's actually going on in Washington.
Well, I deeply appreciate what you gentlemen are doing. We're really very near being out of time. Tell us what we can do. I'm sure there are people listening to us now who say, I like this idea. How can I promote it?
I would say the most important thing they can do, always most important, is to pray for our success, to pray that the state legislators have the courage to, in their own states, to call for a convention of states and to add their state to the applications. It's pending now. It's been introduced in over 30 states all around the country. So number one is we would just appreciate your prayers and the prayers of your listeners that we can accomplish this great task. It's a tall order. And nothing short of prayer is going to make it happen. It's up to God. We'll do our work, and hopefully your listeners will do their work, but in the end, it's up to God. So that's number one. Number two, if they want to actually get involved, there's a lot of work to do, and we appreciate their help. They can do that by going to conventionofstates.com, and they can sign up to be involved. And being involved means sending a petition to your local legislator and telling him he or she to call for a convention of states. It can be volunteering in a more of a solid capacity and that getting more involved. There's all kinds of levels of involvement. Anything folks can do from prayer on down, we sure appreciate it, Dr. Dobson.
And Senator Coburn, last comment.
If we're going to cheat history as a nation and we're going to continue to function as a constitutional republic, things have to change. This is the only way that I see that we can force change on Washington to secure the future for our country.
All right. Name it again so everybody's got it fresh in their minds.
Conventionofstates.com. Article 5, a actual changing and challenging of what the federal government has usurped, the power of the states and the individual citizens, and a discussion about that at the highest level controlled by the states.
And I want to end by telling everyone what we did at the beginning of the program, that you're not pulling this out of thin air. Our founding fathers provided a provision by which a correction like this could and maybe should occur. And it's called Article 5. It's in the Constitution. It's not spooky. It's not something that you've got to pull out of thin air, like what the Supreme Court did for Roe v. Wade and other decisions. This is there for the use of the people because our founding fathers saw it as being necessary and needed in a time like this, perhaps. So thank you. We've been talking to Senator Tom Coburn, former senator from Oklahoma, and we're talking to Mark Meckler, who is an attorney and the president of Citizens for Self-Governance. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you being on, and we'll stay in touch with you over this issue.
Thank you, Dr. Dobson.
What an important and informative program we've heard today on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and I hope that everyone listening today will learn more about this by visiting conventionofstates.com, and we have a link at drjamesdobson.org. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.